Hey, everybody. Welcome back. Another episode of Bootstrap Web. Today, Brian and I have our good buddy Ruben Gomez here with us, and we all have something in common. We have a lot of things in common, actually, but one thing that we want to talk about today is that all of us are working on a second product, a second service. So basically, we started off with one thing, and now we're adding another. And all of us are dealing with challenges on that front. We're all looking at bigger opportunities, otherwise we wouldn't be doing it. So we figured that would be a good conversation to have on what we're doing right, what we feel we're doing wrong, what's working and not working about adding a second line of business to our existing business.
Yeah, looking forward to this one. So, you know, welcome, Ruben. And I think obviously most people know you in these circles by BidSketch, which has been, you know, a well-established SaaS for many years. But I think it'll be interesting to hear what you have in store for a second product. I don't know that you've been very public about it, so we'll see what kind of info we can get out of you today.
Bootstrap Web exclusive.
That's right.
Thanks for inviting me. Yeah, you're both doing second lines. See, mine is not really a second line to the business.
Okay.
It's a second product. It's new. And maybe for a little bit, for a year, maybe a little bit more, it will be a second line to the business. It'll just be two products at the same time. Then eventually it'll just be one product.
Okay. Okay.
Focus.
You're big on focus? Okay. So you see a transition period, right?
Yes.
But the ultimate vision is that this second product will end up being your company. This is what you work on.
Exactly.
Okay, so that's interesting just to dig into on what do you do existing customer base.
Yeah. I want to unpack that question a little bit. I guess before we get ahead of ourselves, like Ruben, how much can you tell us about the new product? Like what is it? Or can you give us any hints?
Yeah, I can tell you a good amount about the new product. There are a few things I can't tell you about, but I think we can cover most of the basic stuff. Like So this new product is an electronic signature product. In that category, it's already a big category. There are a lot of products that exist. So going into it, the interesting challenge is finding our positioning and distribution, which is very different than what we were doing with BidSketch. The proposal category did not exist. So BidSketch was the first product in there. And we had no examples, nothing to look at. We didn't know how big the market was for the lower end. And all throughout, any new competitors that came in, they were copying us, looking at us for what we were doing. And the whole time we were just thinking, is this the best way to solve this problem? How big is this market? You know, will people pay for this? How much will they pay for it? We were thinking about all those problems. It's really nice going into something that's already there with a lot of competition and a lot of products, because we already know the answers to all that stuff. And that stuff, I think, is the hardest.
Mm-hmm.
Really is
like
the hardest.
Doing the market research and kind of figuring out.
Creating a category.
Right.
Right. You're going up the hill first. You're going to get all the arrows.
It's risky. It's super risky. Most of the time it doesn't work out. So this way, we eliminate a lot of the risk. We know that the market's way bigger. We know how big it is. It's like the biggest company in it, like DocuSign. It's like over 100 times bigger than anyone in the proposal category, right? Mm-hmm. So it's really, it becomes more of a positioning, more of a, you know, finding, taking a unique angle with the product, and then finding distribution.
So before I get into like the specifics about like how the products may or may not be connected and all that, I guess I'm wondering maybe more like from your perspective personally, like what led you to start thinking about doing a new product, and how did you start thinking about, well, if I'm going to do a new product, what kind of product or what size of market do I need to go after, and those kind of questions? Like how do you think about that?
Well, it came from just talking to people about doing, I think it started from doing jobs to be done interviews about BidSketch, and jobs to be done interviews, switch interviews, are basically where we take somebody who used to use another product. We take a group of people, usually like 10 or 15, we've done several batches of this, that used to use another product and switch to our product, right? For the proposal category, almost it's the other product is not really, it's Microsoft Word usually. Mm-hmm. So it's not like another SaaS app. And then we also did switch interviews from people that were using our product and switched to something else. And usually that something else is back to Microsoft Word or Excel or whatever they use. So one of the things that we that came up during those conversations, well, it just had always come up in cancellation comments. We asked people why they're canceling. And we initially just made a free form, and then we had them select and ask them in a text box why. And a lot of people just said, not using it, which is a really common thing to say. And it's one of the biggest segments for most SaaS apps, but it doesn't really tell you anything. Like there's a why behind that. That's just a symptom. So in these switch interviews, we were able to discover, especially for the people that just signed up, that there was a disconnect between what the entire category of proposal apps was doing and what they were thinking when they were signing in to use these. And a lot of it revolves around what people are thinking when they use the word proposals, right? So basically, it turned out that with our app and this entire category, we're just servicing one sliver of what customers need when they're closing deals a lot of the time, which is just proposals. But there are a lot of other things that are going on with, and sometimes they don't even need proposals, sales proposals. A lot of times they're just talking about a contract or you know, something smaller, right? Simple estimate.
So it almost sounds like you went from a very niche product and a market. And I know that BidSketch kind of serves a lot of segments, you know, but people who are doing proposals, that's kind of a niche, somewhat large niche, but it's a niche product. A signature app, that seems like a much more wide open space, and you can niche down, but you can also take it in many different directions and many applications.
Right. And the view that we started taking is more of a job view. What do we need to just ensure? Because our goal initially going into it was, okay, we need to get more people using the product. What do we need to get them to use the product more? And it had nothing to do with improving the product, right? You can spend a ton of time, and we did spend a ton of time, like improving onboarding and, you know, trying to do whatever you could, messaging and trying to do demos and trying to just a bunch of stuff. But this is where it gets kind of difficult. If you don't really dig in and uncover the why, then you're never going to get there. You're going to spend years working on that and you'll never get there. So for us, it was this discovery that we're only serving this sliver and there is nothing else for that they can use the product for unless we change the product in a really big way. So this new product was sort of a first step towards that. And that's why I said initially it's going to have its own name, its own website. It's really going to be a separate product, just competing in this market that's already defined. But over time, we will get it to the point of where it's able to help people with just all of their sales documents.
Yeah, so it sounds to me like that's like you following your nose, right? Talking to people, looking at the market, understanding. But then once you have that view and you say, okay, there's an opportunity here. There's something that we can expand beyond addressing a very specific problem and moving upstream or opening up to different – to a larger problem. But then when you look at that, how do you make the decision to say, now I'm actually going to go for that? Because that necessarily means – taking your eye off the ball of the current product, investing money, losing time. Like, so is it something that clearly, I assume, you see an opportunity for the business to grow doing it? Is it being able to charge more? Is it going to a larger market? Is it a combination of those?
Well, it's not straightforward. It can be really difficult. It's that whole thing, like, when do you know when to quit or do something else, right?
Right.
Which is really the toughest thing to know. And for us, it was just a lot of different signals. So that was the beginning of it, right? We spent a lot of time we've spent a lot of time in this category, growing it, and you're always asking yourself, well, how many people are in this category? How many people are in this market? A lot of people. And how many people create proposals? A lot of people. So we should have products that are really big. But there were several signals, like we were leading this, and we're not that big. And there were several other funded competitors coming in, spending a ton of money, mm-hmm. and then like having to change either because they weren't growing quickly enough. So having to go enterprise or having to become a different type of product, or it just over and over, I saw that happening. So that was another pretty good signal. Just to me, it's saying after 6 years, not seeing a product that's pretty big was a really good signal that maybe the way that we're solving this problem, the market's just not that big.
You know, you described here on today's call, you're describing it as a completely separate product, separate name, separate website, and that makes sense. When you told us about it a couple of days ago, when you said that you're going into an electronic signature product, to me, like the connection made total sense. Like it was like BidSketch does proposals, and the second product from your BidSketch company or the BidSketch brand or whatever would be a signature app. I mean, those kind of go hand in hand. I mean, I think I even saw that BidSketch has like a signature feature built into it. You could theoretically sell the same product to that same customer base. So I guess the question is, why not? Because like when I look at Carthook, you know, cart abandonment and, you know, e-commerce cart funnels, I mean, those kind of go hand in hand. It kind of makes sense to offer them from the same Carthook brand. And like Audience Ops, a content service, we're doing a content calendar, we're doing a content training product. Like multiple products serving the same or at least overlapping segments of the same customer base. Like why not go that direction with this next product?
You mean sort of like BidSketch
signatures.
Or even if it's like a different name and different domain, at least keep them under the same brand.
Because I wanted to experiment with the new distribution strategy. I wanted to experiment with freemium.
Interesting. Is that the norm in that competitive space?
No, it's not. It has been done. It was done by EchoSign. It's being done currently by HelloSign, and it was really good for them early on. They have a nice distribution deal with Google and Google Docs, so they're not pushing the freemium that much nowadays. But no one else is doing it. So I saw an opportunity there from a distribution standpoint to try something. And I always wanted to try it again because I tried it with BidSketch, but this category is just a very different type of product. The time to value is much faster. And the sort of like viral component of it, there's a lot more there than there was with BidSketch.
So like if I ask somebody else to sign a document, they see that I'm using this awesome mm-hmm. tool to sign it, and then they see it too. Yeah.
Yeah. So I know that it has worked for at least a couple. And also, I can't try that if it's BidSketch, if it's another BidSketch tool, whatever. I don't want to eat into our existing revenue.
That's tricky. So you don't see your existing customer base. Do you see the existing customer base as potential new customers?
Yeah, I think so. This might completely change depending on what we do later on. But right now, what it's looking like is that some of them will be customers. There's some overlap there for sure. Because we have a signature feature built in, and we do integrations with Right Signature, and people, you know, pay and use that, and we know that we send them new customers. Right. So that's going to happen, but it's not going to be that much of as much of an overlap as you would think. So I think, especially because of the frequency thing, if we do freemium, a lot of those people are just going to fall under the free plan.
Okay, that makes sense. Yeah, it's such a, it's a little scary, is it not? It's, it feels like starting a second business. You know, I know for us, it is.
It's a second business, but to me, it's not scary at all. I'm actually very excited. Yeah, I'm super excited. Like,
so are you? That's good. I was excited like 3 months ago.
So I know that you're big on focus, and I guess when you talk about focus, it's like the end game. Like, you want these to be standalone focused businesses on their own. But today and between now and getting to that point, it's going to be a lot of being split in two directions. Like, how are you handling that?
Right. So we have three Rails developers, and it seems so far that it's going to be two of them really are going to be able to work on the new product. And one of them is going to be busy with like support or new features. We just had to do a FreshBooks integration because they just launched a new product and our customers were asking about that. So we spent, like, we have a super deep integration. So we just spent a month working on that. On the, you know, so we're not going to be able to go as fast as I want to. Like, no, you never go as fast as you want to. You guys know this. But considering that I have three full-time developers on the team, I definitely would like to have been going faster, but it's not going to happen with another product that's out there right now.
So you are using, clearly, the BidSketch team to work on the second product. So in that sense, they're not really separate, at least not today. Like, eventually, you'll have different...
You mean the teams?
Yeah.
Oh, no. Eventually... No, eventually, this new product will be what people on the BidSketch website sign up to.
I'm confused. I thought BidSketch was going to be BidSketch and the new product was going to be its own thing.
Yeah, for about a year, maybe a little bit longer than that, until we get the new product to a point of where it can do what BidSketch can do.
Oh, I see. So you're rolling BidSketch into the new, like the proposal functionality features come into the new product.
You're going to integrate with yourself.
Well, it's going
to... You're talking about making BidSketch the new product.
The features that are in BidSketch, what it can do. So basically, what's missing from these electronic signature products is sort of like document creation.
Right.
Because you can upload existing documents.
You got to bring in your own docs.
Yes. So it's document creation and being able to style and design these documents, right?
Okay. So it sounds to me like a beautiful unfair advantage, right? Is that where you're going on the positioning?
From a positioning standpoint, once we're there, it'll be definitely, it's just way more unique. And there's nothing, you know, that's a very unique product. It's easy. It's kind of like in the early days of BidSketch, there was nothing there. So we were, and you kind of have this as well, to where you can just kind of say what the product does, right? It's just proposal software for designers is what we used to say. That was enough. You can't really say that, like, going into this electronic signature space. I can't say electronic signatures. You need more. What your product does is kind of unique enough, you can lean a little bit more on that. And eventually, we'll be in that position again.
Yeah.
Not for a good. It's going to be a while. Maybe we never get there. Maybe the pull is just so strong in a different direction. Who knows?
Yeah, we you know, especially my side of things, where I communicate with prospects and customers. On one hand, it's amazing to say something unique. On the other hand, it a lot of times requires explanation.
Right.
So when I say something, there's, you know, we have one gigantic misconception about our product that I have to talk about every single time. I get on a demo and I said, you know, the first few minutes, just so we're clear, it doesn't do this, it does this. And some people go, oh, then that's not for me. And I say, thank you very much. We just saved each other half an hour. Have a great day. Yeah, because it's
How
unique.
How often does that come up?
I unfortunately feel the need to bring it up every single time because I have gone through a 30-minute conversation and then brought it up at the end and they say, oh, but that won't work for me. And I say, I'd like to go shoot myself now. So you know, I just like close the deal and you're going to start a trial and then it's something you didn't expect. So the unique aspect, what I found is that I have to show. When I show it on screen, I get, oh, that's amazing. You know, but before then, if it's wrong for them, I have to like explain that. So the unique thing has been double-edged.
I've been thinking a lot about that lately, like the I hate this term, like the elevator pitch for the product, right? And think about this audience apps calendar product a lot, and the quickest version is like it's a content calendar, but there are other unique benefits that I keep kind of writing and rewriting in my notebook about like how would I explain this in a really concise way to get the unique benefit across. And I've got a couple different variations, but I think that's a good exercise for everyone because, you know, if you were to be a guest on somebody's podcast or if you meet someone at a conference, how would you describe your product in a way, not to say like what it is, but to really focus in on like, what is the problem that it solves that makes you go, oh, like, you know, because when I take 2 or 3 minutes to start to explain it, then I get the, oh, I get, oh, wow, that's interesting. But how do I make that more concise into like a quick one sentence, just fire it off, you know?
There are already other content calendar products out there, right?
Right. And if I only say content calendar, that's the reaction, right? So the next step is getting into, well, it has these checklists and you can automate and have like relative due dates based on where the content is in the calendar. And you can kind of automate the like recurring tasks. And then there's tracking performance of content from your calendar looking back. So like that's way too long.
Right. Yeah. You lost me three sentences ago. Yeah. So Ruben, you have the same issue. Why is someone going to currently use DocuSign and then look over to you and say, oh, you know, in one sense, you explain to me why I should consider moving off DocuSign.
Right. Yep. Having a category that already exists is a good, you know, shorthand. It's a good thing to lean on to quickly get somewhere. But yeah, you need a hook. You need something that's different. And I feel like you need one thing that instead of trying to come up with a bunch of other things, because there could be other things that make you different, but when you're talking about it or showing it or explaining it, it's best to, like, the way that I feel is that it's best to lead with something. Lead with your strongest thing, the most compelling thing.
That's interesting. We were forced to do that. And, you know, my instinct was to keep it wider because I wanted to attract more people. So you want to sell things through a funnel, that's one thing. But there are a few competitors that do that. We're the only ones that do it specifically for physical products. So if you go to the marketing site, the first thing it says is sell more physical products through a funnel. And then people look at it and say, that's what I need, because I'm already using ClickFunnels to do upsells, but they don't work for physical products. So I'm bending backwards. And now you're telling me that you're for physical, that one thing that differentiates is the fact that it's for X.
Yeah. Yeah. And depending on your product and you know, the market out there, that could be enough and that could be perfect. That could be just all you need. So we're still working on figuring that out, the positioning aspect. We did recently, I sent out identified four, having calls and conversations with people, I identified four different features or things we could maybe lead with, and sent out a survey to sort of verify and just gauge the interest, the real interest on these features. So there was some interest, like just going off of conversations and phone calls. But then the survey, I guess, was based off of, I just copied something that I saw from Kissmetrics, like Keaton and Neil Patel doing. But I think it comes from a tactic that Patrick from the Price Intelligently guy talks about, which is you give them a set of options. So as an example, these features, we listed the four features. We asked them, pick the one that's the most valuable to you out of these four. Then they pick the most valuable feature, but only one, right? And then the very next question is pick the least valuable feature. And they pick the least valuable feature. So it was great that we did ask that least valuable feature, because then we saw that the thing that I was most excited about and several people were most excited about was the thing that most people just didn't care about. Mm. So if we hadn't asked that question, it would have looked like, oh, okay, so more people are excited about these other features, but there are some people still excited about that thing, that very unique thing that we're planning. So maybe we should still build it. We just won't lead with it. And the problem is that other feature, it would have taken a very long time to build and would have just been a ton of time. Just being able to see that almost everyone said, I don't care about that feature.
It's so important. Like, I'm going to go do that today. I'm going to ask that question to our beta customers group, like right now. Because it saves you time on development, which basically means you're saving money and you can get to market faster. But it's also from a marketing standpoint, you can, you know, you figure out what to lead with, what to go in your headline. How do you describe it verbally? How do you talk about it? How do your customers recommend it? Oh, it's this type of tool that does this and it's unique, you know, so valuable. I guess I'm wondering, how did you start to do that validation process and the customer development, customer research? Did you go straight to BidSketch users, or did you look for non-BidSketch users intentionally, or how did you go about that?
Non-BidSketch users on our list.
On your list, okay.
And then BidSketch users on our list. And what we're doing right now is I'm targeting people that are using these electronic signature products. So right now I have Twitter ads running, targeting people that are using DocuSign, and it asks them if they've been a DocuSign, been paying for DocuSign less than 90 days. If they help us with some research, they get a $50 Amazon gift card.
Can you take us through that? Like, you don't have to share the website or anything, but like, okay, so they see a Twitter ad. What's on the Twitter ad? What did you set up a website or a survey, or what are they seeing?
They're seeing, so once they click through on the Twitter ad, they get taken to a Typeform survey. So the Typeform survey asks them questions just to verify that they're the type of people we want to talk to. Ask them, have you been using, how long have you been paying for DocuSign? It's like one of them's like, I'm not paying for it. One of them's like, I'm still a trial user. And over 90 days, under 90 days. So we want to do what we're doing now is switch interviews, people that just switched to DocuSign. Because we get so much insight from that.
That's interesting.
From a product and marketing standpoint. And then the next question after that is like, how many documents do you send in a month, regardless of what they answered? And then from there, if they're the right type of person, then give them a link to schedule the appointment. Here's the, you know, with a little message saying, what are the deals? Something like, if they're willing to do a 30-minute call with us to help us improve the electronic signature space, then we will get a free $50 Amazon gift card.
How many of those are you doing?
So just started the ads, have done so far 3 interviews. Have another one coming up. So all you need typically is about 10 to 15 interviews, and around 10, you really start to see all the patterns. Even now, you know, you start to see the patterns. So you don't need that many interviews when it comes to this style of interviews, which is good.
Yeah, the switch piece of it is interesting. Is that because it's like fresh on their minds, or they're very in right. touch with what they're excited about and why they left?
Well, it's
maybe just the fact that they switched.
Yeah, it's because they it's fresh, right? It's within the first 90 days, so they know why, what happened. And when we're doing these interviews, we don't ask them, why did you buy? Because people tell you what they tell you is not true. What they tell you is what they think you want to hear, or what they told themselves about why they buy. Instead, we just ask them, so what did you do? What were you using? Oh, you were using, whatever, another product. When did you first start to what happened the first time that you thought, I don't know, maybe I should look for something else, right? So you just dig into the story. Like, what did you do next? So, okay, when did you start looking? Why did you start looking that day? What happened that day that made you start seriously looking for? Why did you sign up for the trial that day? Why not the day before, right? So all these, and you'll follow along. It's never within the same day. It's always months. It's always it started months ago and several things happened. And so you get to see what are the things that are actually pushing people towards buying a product. You get to see what they're deciding about, what are they looking at when they're evaluating a product? And what are they saying? This isn't important enough for me not to try this out or not to pay.
Yeah, we all tend to focus on the actual point of conversion. And right. We think the thing on our site and the way our pricing grid is set up and that's going to make...
You just make the button yellow instead of green. Then.
Right. It's all this lead up that goes onto it that you don't see it, beneath the surface that actually makes the decision.
Right. And even with even when they buy with a lot of SaaS products, you have a trial period. And so it's when they enter their credit card information is not when they buy. Right.
Right. Because if you do credit card up front
later. It's also not when you bill them later. That's not when they decided to buy either. Mm-hmm. So a good question for just uncovering that after walking through the entire thing, how they evaluated, what happened, all that stuff, is asking them, at what point, throughout this whole, you're going through these steps, you're sending out this document, and at what point did you think to yourself, okay, yeah, this is going to work? And then that's basically the point when they decided to buy. That's the thing that pushed them over the edge.
Interesting. Mm-hmm. When you have the list and a customer base and a subscribe and kind of like leads who never converted to customers for BidSketch, I mean, it's obvious to start there, but I think it's really smart to go after cold traffic who's never heard of you before. And that's something with the audience ops stuff, the prepaid customers for it basically came from my list, or they've been following audience ops or my personal list. But I did do some cold outreach to people on social media, just like using Twitter search and searching through Facebook groups and just basically stalking people and being really kind of creepy on Facebook. Be like, hey, you don't know me, but I want to ask you something. And I mean, that definitely helped give me some good insights and a few conversations, and some long email chains and things. But, I do feel like I need to do more of that in the next couple of months to get people who are outside of my network.
You do get a different perspective, especially if you have any type of brand, whether it's, personal or product, and people will often want to buy your next thing because they trust you and they like you.
It's good, but it can only get you so far.
Yeah. And it's tough to get very honest feedback that way. So it's great to just start or very early on talk to people that don't know anything about you or your products or anything like that. And I've told some people about some other founders about what I'm doing, or people just trying to get started. Some of them have mentioned that'll be a lot easier for you because you already have a bunch of customers, you have a list and all that stuff.
Yeah.
I almost hear it like an excuse. Like, you'll hear a lot of times people say, well, this person, yeah, of course they were able to do a product or a new product or make that SaaS successful because they already had an audience. A
lot makes of people it easier to dismiss, you know?
Yeah.
Makes us feel better. I'm guilty of it all the time. So I wanted to get into the money side of it. It sounds like a pretty engineering approach to figuring out who the right audience is and the messaging, the positioning. But what about the pricing and the distribution? You said you're almost like just as excited about experimenting with new distribution as you are about the product and what it does and the audience it serves. So right. What do you mean by that? Is that I've looked at that also and I say, oh, I can't wait to do outbound because then my contract size is high enough and that's, you know, but then what if that doesn't work as expected? Like it's got to rest.
Work as expected. It doesn't. Right. It never does. So
okay.
Like I like David Cancel's thinking on it, which he says for anything pretty much, for any effort, most efforts, think about it in terms of it's wrong. It's going to be wrong. I just need to know how wrong. Is it, you know, how off is it? Is it 5%, 10%, or is it 90% off? It just gets you in the mode of like knowing that what you're putting out or what you're doing first is not intended to be your final thing. It needs
to be
analyzing. Like, yeah, because if you once you start like, and I've done this in the past a lot, especially with split tests and just things that I think are, oh, this is amazing. Like this is gonna work. I'm gonna get so many customers from it, and then it doesn't. I'm like, what? How can it not work?
Yeah.
But yeah, changing. So I've started changing my thinking around when it comes to that, and it is much better because it puts you in a sort of mindset to like think about, okay, why didn't it work? What can I change here? Maybe I can and not just say, okay, this didn't work. Let me move on to something else.
Yeah, I do. I guess I just want to echo Jordan's question about how do you make this financially viable? And do you have a timetable or a runway in mind? Or do you have any sense of like how long is development going to take to get a sellable version out shipped? Or are you thinking about those kinds of things right now?
So BitSketch is profitable. It's paying for the team. So it's the way that I'm thinking about it is just that BitSketch is funding this new product. When I didn't have a product, I did it nights and weekends. So essentially my job was funding the product, is how I thought about it. So as far as a timeline, as fast as possible, always. I'm not so stuck on trying to come up with a specific, like with BitSketch, I was very, I had a, you know, a very specific date in mind where I thought, okay, we're going to hit beta here. It was pretty close to that. This time around, I'd say the approach is a little bit different. So we just do weekly sprints. So I'm looking more at velocity and learning and with the mindset that we're going to keep iterating and improving on the product and until we get it to a point where it's good enough to start selling. And good enough to start selling doesn't mean perfect. So that would take forever. It would never come out. It just needs to be able to make the marketing possible, right?
To actually fulfill on some of the marketing promises.
Yeah.
If the marketing promises can pull people in and you can fulfill on those core promises, then you're good enough.
It does no good just marketing something that's too early. And at the same time, if you wait till it's perfect or it just, you know, yeah, it's just going to take too long. You'll never get there.
And is there anything to the, the numbers? So right now you look at an existing business in BitSketch and you say, okay, we have X number of clients and our average revenue per user is Y. Do you look at that and say, how do I improve that? Or which one do I try to improve? Like more customers and at a higher price point? Is it just a higher price point? Like which one drives what? I know when we went into our new product, we knew we needed to figure out a way to go up market on the pricing.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure we're going to increase our average revenue per customer, but not initially. Our average revenue per customer might actually go down initially, especially with the distribution strategy that we're thinking of. Yeah. So one thing that I'm very comfortable with and we're pretty good with is there are a lot of different, there's SaaS products that are very different. So you have SaaS products that are enterprise. You have SaaS products that are a little bit more, they're not quite enterprise, but they're more, you know, kind of like what you're doing, Jordan. Mm-hmm. Both of you, actually. And then you have the SaaS products that are like $30 a month, $20 a month, right? And those products rely way more on volume. And pretty good at that, or very comfortable with that. Mm-hmm. So, but just talking about the freemium distribution, it's also all about volume. That's where we're starting. And I'm going to be very loose, and I'm okay with, I like just starting low and then just increasing pricing and seeing where we stop making as much money. But I'm also very good with, one of the things that I learned from doing BitSketch and doing a lot of price testing, one of the best things that we did unintentionally early on, just because I didn't know any better, was that I gave away way too much the very first early days of the product. Meaning I didn't try to limit like users and features and all this stuff. And that was a good thing because later on, I was able to look back at the data and say, okay, naturally, if you don't limit people, where do they naturally like, oh, you know, we have big groups of people adding three users. Then the next, next breakpoint is like five. Then it goes to 10. And then there's a big chunk of people using this feature. And it's basically, you're not artificially limiting usage based off, you know, your pricing grid or any limits like that. It's just, you get to see it and it helps you design the pricing.
So when you said kind of start, in terms of pricing, kind of start low and build up, maybe test up over time, are you talking about basically kind of start with one initial price and test price increases on that same plan or whatever's included in that pricing, or more like aspirational pricing where over time you start to build more and more features to add more value and kind of justify a higher price, or maybe a little bit of both?
I want to see what the value is of what we have at the time that we're testing the pricing. So I think that it's both. I think that there's a minimum in mind that I want to hit, but that's going to come later. In the beginning, it's going to be, okay, what can we charge for this? And moving that pricing up and seeing where things stop working as well.
And that's a function of what, looking around at the market? Right, because that's if you have an existing market, you have all these different price points. I always find that so fascinating how very similar products can have hugely different pricing. And yeah. You try to look under the covers, like why are you charging 10 times more for what looks like the same thing?
Well, it depends. Depends on the market. It depends on what people are thinking and how people are evaluating products going into it. Because if they're not evaluating a lot of the same products that to them look identical, several products like that, then it doesn't really make sense to charge what everyone else is charging or keep it in that zone.
Right.
So that's part of what we're looking to discover through these switch interviews here. It's like, how do they evaluate things?
Right. Some markets, people really, you know all of your competitors. That's your job to know them.
Yep.
But some markets, the person signing up doesn't care at all. I mean,
Yeah, with BitSketch, we were the first app that did proposals, and then there were several competitors that followed through, and all the other competitors were pricing a lot less than we were.
Right, which I hate. I always respect someone who comes out, copies you, and then prices higher. I'm like, yes, thank you.
Well, we started pricing really low in the beginning when we first came out, and then we, moved pricing up, and then we found a spot that worked well, but then everyone else followed in, and they're pricing low. The problem, so you would say, well, then people are going to start using the other products or whatever, or people are going to look at those other products and think, this is the product we want to use because this is, you know, even though it's the difference is $30 a month and $10 a month, this is more of a premium product. It's better.
That's all relative. It's all relative. Well, I've had it. Good.
None of that stuff even matters if they're not even looking at the other products. So what we found was that they weren't even looking at the other products. So it, like the pricing from the other products didn't matter one bit because they weren't aware of it.
Yeah,
so
as long as it's tolerable, as long as it makes sense on its
own. We all know exactly who all of our competitors are and everything that they all do. But there are a lot of people out there, and they have better things to do than analyzing every competitor out there.
It's not just that. It's also distribution. Like the early competitors that were out there sucked at distribution. Really, they weren't very good at it, so they couldn't get in front of people to let them know that there were alternatives. Nowadays, it's a very different thing. Nowadays, almost everyone that tries our product, BidSketch, is looking at other products. So nowadays, it is much more competitive, and the pricing, there is a lot of comparison shopping.
I do want to ask you about that, like on that same note with competitive. So we are entering a very competitive space. You know, you already listed off a few potential competitors. There's probably many more on that list. Yep. How do you think about that from a feature roadmap standpoint? And I'm thinking about this too as we're building, you know, version one of this SaaS. Like, I don't think that we're entering a hyper competitive space, but we definitely have a few competitors that I would say are that people would compare us to, and that has already come out in the interviews that I've done. So, how much of your time and energy this early on is spent just saying, okay, these features are baseline must-haves that when people are evaluating this product against other competitors, they're just going to have to see them. Otherwise, it's kind of a deal breaker.
Yeah.
Before you get into, oh, that's the unique differentiator feature. You know, how do you think about that?
This is one of the really nice things about going into a market that has a bunch of products already doing this. That's why I'm excited about this. It's just so much easier to do all of this stuff, to come up with a baseline. So there's this book called Ready, Fire, Aim that I'm following the first, you know, three or four chapters of it. I'm sort of following that strategy, which is you go out there and you look at all the products that are doing this thing, and you evaluate their features, were they doing well, were they not doing well, what people are saying about them. And then from that, you sort of get a baseline of what features you need to have and where the gaps are, what people are missing, what they want that they're not getting from these products.
And I think it works the other way too. I think there are plenty of well-established competing companies who just have feature bloat, and some percentage of their features, their customers just aren't using, and it harms the overall experience. So,
that's super common, especially.
And it can lead you down that rabbit hole of, all right, let's copy these features, but you know, a lot of those can be a waste of time and maybe take you in the wrong direction.
Well, the thing is you don't just copy to copy. Which happens a lot in SaaS, there are a lot of competitors that copied things of ours that they shouldn't have copied because they weren't that good. And we are always like, we should just kill this or we need to improve it or something like that. And meanwhile, other people are copying it. So I think that's where the conversations with customers and the additional research comes in, just to make sure that you're not, taking stuff, like putting in your baseline, just stuff that is not worth doing.
Yeah, that's one of I've been having a lot of conversations, and there's one competing company who definitely comes up more than any other in these conversations. And I find that actually really, really helpful, because as soon as somebody mentions that name, I basically jump on that and I'm asking, why did you try that product? What do you love about that product? What's working for you? What's kind of falling short? And I mean, they're talking, like, they came to my form looking at my product now. So clearly they are not completely satisfied with the other one. So
yeah, that's perfect. That's perfect.
There's a reason why they're doing that. Yeah.
Yeah. We've had a funny experience over the past 2 weeks. So we've been playing with our pricing. So our pricing now is $300 a month. So there's only one competitor that does something similar to what we do, and they're $37 a month. So we're 10x, right? So I have had, and we're forcing demos at this point because a conversation with me just works better than letting someone sign up on their own. That's just this kind of stage we're at in terms of the onboarding and experience and explanation, all that. So I've had the, you are aware of how much they cost, right? Like where they were like baffled, like, I don't understand how you could price it at 300 if they're at 37. And it's forced me, like you have, Brian, you have one other competitor to look at, and you start to differentiate with one instead of like this giant market thing, like hundreds of features out there in the market. You're looking at someone coming from one product and, you know, doing a demo with them, or they just ran a trial with them. So it's like, it's head to head ish.
Yeah. There's in my case, that ish is pretty broad though, because I would say roughly 30 or 40% of people are naming other competing tools that they've tried. And of those people, most of them say this one tool, but there's another 50 or 60% that have used spreadsheets or nothing, you know, and I'm digging into that too, you know.
How many would you say that mention or know that, like, out of the people that you talk to, know that one competitor?
I've made the mistake before of mentioning them, assuming that they know about it, and they're like, who? never mind.
What's that website again?
the truth is that so there's like a range. There's one band of the market that doesn't know about them at all. Mm-hmm. Then there's the largest band of the market knows about them and is active and understands the market, is trying to accomplish very specific goals, very knowledgeable. And then I have a conversation. It's more direct. It's more open. Like, this is what they do. This is what we do. And here's why. And here's what's better about theirs and what's better about ours. You have to figure what's best for you. But the highest end of the market, the part that we want to go for, our best customers, don't even care about them. They most likely don't know they exist, but they're just going on like, you and me are talking right now, Jordan. I'm trying to figure out if I want to do business with you. And it's not about features. It's not about competitors. It's not about pricing. So that's what we found. Like, the middle of the market knows and is comparing, but the actual higher end of the market is more relationship oriented. And the $37 a month hurts them because they know they're going to get $37 a month worth of service.
Gotcha. Yeah. Yeah. It's scary for them, probably. Like, if they're thinking about it, they're like, oh, I don't know.
Right.
About paying so little for a product. Like,
yeah. And the thing is, if they're a company that's, call it, let's say they're spending $50,000 a month on advertising, for them to try to accomplish something so important as like having people check out on something and pay $37 a month for it is like, it is scary for them.
I guess I have one more question. I'd love to hear both of you on this. And I know we're running a little long here, but if I think back to Restaurant Engine, that was a very offline customer base, offline audience, low tech savvy bar to me. We had a small segment of customers who were a little bit younger, more savvy. They would look at different competitors, but and we had many direct competitors specifically doing restaurant websites. There were huge companies doing TV commercials for that kind of stuff. And almost all of our customers were just not aware of other competitors, and really our competition was like hiring a freelance web designer or an agency or something. So that offline piece, I think, made it easier to not care so much. And I specifically positioned us as like, we had a comparison table: Restaurant Engine versus hiring a freelancer, not Restaurant Engine versus using Squarespace or something like that, you know. And so I'm wondering about how you guys are thinking about it, because with Audience Ops, we do have a very online, tech savvy, web savvy, like, whatever options are out there, they've probably looked at them or tried them, or at least that's the assumption. I mean, Jordan, you're focusing on physical products, which makes me think there's probably half and half, like some e-commerce store owners who kind of know their way around things, but, you know, if you're selling, you know, like hunting gear, like, are they, how tech savvy are they? You know,
our general assumption when we market is that we are introducing a new concept, and we're we're talking about it in that way. And in many ways, it's like an enviable position that I used to envy other people. I used to see even competitors in the card abandonment space, and I know that there are 25 existing competitors, but they're talking about it like it's the newest thing I just discovered. Check this out. It's going to change your life. And I was always like, damn, that's good for you, because why bottle yourself up? So in this situation, just by default, not on purpose, that's our approach. Our approach is we need to start from scratch. We need to assume the person does not know anything about this, and we're introducing a new concept and a tool to achieve that new concept in a marketing strategy. So that's kind of our approach. Ruben?
How are you reaching them? Are you reaching it's online, right? It's not offline.
No, it's online, and it's what we're assuming is that people are targets are just not the type of people who live inside of Facebook groups who discover every new tool as soon as it comes out. We're assuming these people are heads down running multi-million dollar e-commerce businesses, and they're looking at their campaigns and their metrics and their distribution, and that's where their focus is. So they're not 100% up to speed on every new tool. So when we approach them, it is online, though we are just about to start outbound, which is a combination of email and calls.
I feel like if I think about BidSketch, especially a designer or something, like they're savvy. They're gonna look around, and they've probably tried different things. They design their own proposals, right? But the signatures, you can go much more broad, right? There are plenty of industries who would at some one point or another need electronic signatures, or maybe start to think about how can I take my offline business online with signatures.
It's super broad. We're likely starting with a specific segment. So there are a few that are really big with electronic signature apps. One of them is sales. Another one is real estate. Then you have legal, stuff like that. So for us, the one with most overlap to our existing audience, because we do have some salespeople using BidSketch, would be sales. So that's where we're going to start. And from a positioning standpoint, it'll still, you know, that's why we've spent so much time trying to identify the gaps in the current products that are out there. So we built it into the product, even into our distribution strategy with freemium, and just make it something that's hard to compare to other things that are out there.
Right, so there's like the base assumption that someone understands. When you say electronic signature, you don't have to explain that part. So the focus can be on how it's done.
Right, exactly. Yep.
Cool.
Awesome. Well, why don't we wrap it up there, fellas?
Well, cool. I wish us luck on all of our second multi-product adventures. And let's do it. Ruben, thanks very much for coming on.
Yeah, thanks for hanging out today, Ruben. Of course, you guys can check out bidsketch.com or Earthling Works on Twitter. Is that right?
Yep, Earthling Works.
Awesome, guys.
Cool. All right, everyone. Have a good one.
Take care.